This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Today we are recording in front of a live studio audience at the Pleasure Chest. As you can hear, we have a great crowd and we are so excited. I want to jump right in and tell you what we're doing and who we're doing it with. I created this panel because I believe that in most mainstream media, sex workers do not have the opportunity to speak for themselves and about their own experiences. The mainstream media has not caught up to the demands of sex workers to let them speak. And so lots of people who don't do sex work talk about what sex workers should be doing with their lives, which is fucked up. So I'm in an interesting position here because I'm like the moderator interviewer, and yet I don't want to be the one to frame the conversation. So it's going to be like a delicate dance of me letting go and then me asking some questions, but obviously trying to give all of you, you know, the space to say what you want so that I'm not like guiding the discussion. Okay, so let me tell you who we have. I'm going to do it in order for the audience. Okay. Mistress Dylan Diosa is a queer femme and Maya professional dominatrix and shibari rigger. She has over 6 years' experience in the art of shibari bondage, impact play, CBT, and humiliation. Mistress Dylan specializes in kink education and facilitates workshops on shibari, kink safety, and sexual healing through BDSM. She also specializes in dominatrix and submissive training. Currently, Mistress Dylan is a dom at the Dominion, the longest continually operating dungeon in America. Goddess Corey is a sex worker, advocate, and student studying biotechnology. They've been doing various forms of sex work for 4 years, including camming, BDSM consultations, porn, and live performance. They help lead a Black femme-centered play party called 4CLA and have guest lectured at colleges and universities across Southern California, including Pitzer College, CSU Channel Islands, and CSU Northridge. They talk on identity and sex work. Avery St. Germain is a Black queer sex worker in the Los Angeles area. She's currently a stripper, escort, sugar baby, and online content producer, and has experience in adult retail and BDSM. Avery's an active member of the Los Angeles BDSM scene and co-founded the Black femme-centered kink space, 4CLA. She's passionate about her work, sex workers' rights, and dismantling racism and discrimination within the sex industry. And finally, Susie Q is the author of Truth, Justice, and the American Whore. Her writing and perspectives have been featured in publications like Rolling Stone, Wired, Alternet, and her weekly sex column, The Whore Next Door, ran in San Francisco Weekly from 2014 to 2017. Susie has been an unrelenting advocate for the rights of all workers, regardless of their industry, and her hard work in securing the Free Speech Coalition's victory over Cal OSHA regulations that would have unfairly impacted adult performers resulted in her being appointed its Director of Policy and Industry Relations, where she went on to lead the adult performer community in defeating noxious California Proposition 60 by over 1 million votes. Susie got her start in the adult entertainment business dancing at the Lusty Lady in San Francisco and has worked as a performer in adult films since 2012. She's creator and host of The Whorecast, which is a great podcast, and the newly launched Ill Repute podcast with Sovereign Sire. Okay, so we're going to start out with a softball question. And I guess we'll start by going down the line. And you're going to remind the audience who you are, since there's a lot of different voices, just to begin. And then pay attention, audience. Memorize their voices, and then you'll know who's speaking. What is the one thing that you wish people knew about your job? Okay, you want to start? You want to start, Susie?
Yeah, sure. So many things, but the first thing that popped into my mind, actually, okay, two things. One's softball and one's hardball. First one is, I think people don't realize how much computer work sex workers do in this day and age, that, like, most of my job is sitting in my pajamas with my glasses on, like, you know, like, a weird little, like, gremlin computer person, you know? Like, that's, that, it's a freelance hustle. It's a gig economy. It's a lot of online admin work. You're your own CEO, you're your own CFO, you're your own HR, you're your own accountant, your bookkeeper, and you're the product. I encountered a girl recently who was thinking of, you know, dabbling in the adult industry. I really broke it down for her. I'm like, it makes you a second-class citizen. It's a great job. I love it so much. It's my career choice. I would be in the I wish I could choose something different almost. Like, I could, but this is my passion work. This is what I love to do.
Yeah, this is the goddess, Corey. So I think first part is that, like, this is, like, work. Like, it's not just me having sex all the time. It's not just, like, this really fun dalliance into, like, sexuality and, like, flopping about and, like, just getting boned all the time. That'd be nice, but it's not what it is. And then second part is that most of the shittiest experiences I've ever had in this industry have not been with clients. They have been with the people who are the facilitators of spaces, the people who, the porn producers, they've been with, right, the people behind the camera, or, yeah, the people who facilitate spaces as opposed to, like, my actual, like, clients.
This is Mistress Dylan. People always ask me, like, why do you say that you do healing through BDSM? And honestly, I feel like being a Dom means that I should get, like, a certificate, like an honorary, like, therapist certificate, you know? It's funny always to, like, think about explaining it to people who don't engage in kink in the vanilla world. But yeah, I feel like a lot of people don't acknowledge how much of a nurturing role and how much of, like, a listening, active listener and participant in that it takes to be a Dom and to be a submissive as well. Like, it just takes a lot more effort than just, like, physically hurting you with my implements, you know? Yeah.
Does that resonate with other people?
Yeah. Definitely.
tell me more.
Yeah, I do have my own sexuality. And I think that remembering that, and sometimes for me, that has come from things like BDSM and the leather community. That's me, you know, that's at my core. That's important to maintain. I remember when I first started dancing at the Lusty, and, like, the Lusty was analog camming too. Like, I was a girl in a box, and the public could come in and, like, come through a little door and negotiate a scene behind glass with me. So I was having all these crazy sexual experiences that I had, you know, what the construction worker off the street in North Beach wanted to see that afternoon, I was going to do behind glass. So I was processing through all of that coming home at night. And I would sort of, like, force myself to masturbate, even if I wasn't feeling it, even if I wasn't in the mood, I would make myself have a sexual experience that was just for me at night, you know, and that got me through, I think. You know, it, some girls, a lot of people do not make it through their first year of sex work. It's a hard job, you know, and it's not for everybody. And especially the second class citizen component of it, not being able, like having your relationship with law enforcement and the justice system fully change forever. Like no matter where you stood before that, there is a definite difference in like how you interact and move through the world.
I don't think my relationship with law enforcement has changed at all. I'm black. If the people on the radio do not know, I'm very black. And so my relationship with law enforcement has not changed. It has always been a dicey situation. Wherever I go, it has always been a dicey situation. So adding sex work on top of that wasn't really scary necessarily as far as like law enforcement went. I think it was more like for me, like having family find out more than anything else. Because like there is like deep-rooted like religious components in blackness that like that made me really afraid.
There was a time when we weren't on the internet. Okay, I was alive at that time. I was in school, and so. But now it's like you're technically someone you're related to could stumble upon you right. on the internet.
Yeah, that's something I had to come to terms with this year where I was like, okay, I want to work on branding and I want to expand social media and like put myself out there more. But there's that, you know, that reality that family could see. Like it, once it's on the internet, it's there.
Right.
But then after a while, I was just like, fuck it. Like, you know, I'm living for myself right now. I'm supporting myself, you know, through sex work for the past few years. Like, you know, if my family has something to say about it, like, they can support me. Like,
so they don't know?
No. I mean, there was a time where, like, my mother would ask me, like, who's Master So-and-so on your Facebook? So that's what brought about second Facebook and second Instagram and having two versions of everything. Although I'm still pretty on top of that and keeping things separate, I still have to be content with the fact that this could happen one day. You might be out at the family. Your family could find it. Just be at peace with it.
My biggest thing is always, like, if my family ever actually, like, found any of my stuff, most of the clips that I do are, like, fetish clips, and most of the porn that I've done is, like, dyke porn. And so, like, if they ever found that, I would have some questions for them more than anything else.
I mean, I thought that too.
You're not like on the home page.
I'm not on, no, and I'm also black, so I'm definitely not on the home page. But
so they have to dig
through some stuff before they get to me.
I started doing sex work in like 2009 or 10, which was short, you know, because I graduated from college in 2008, which is when the recession hit. And so, like, a talking point that I often used during that time to help people understand, like, my choice to do sex work as, you know, this person was, you know, in 2008, a lot of people had to figure out how to make a dollar stretch. And for some people, that meant, you know, starting to drive Uber or renting their extra room out on Airbnb, which is something I also did in San Francisco, or putting an ad on myredbook.com, which was the site that I used to advertise as an escort before it was seized by the FBI in 2014. So, you know, we are all part of the gig economy now, and like things have really shifted. And I think that's kind of contributed to this idea of just like, yeah, everybody's got to make their money, you know?
I'm interested in something you said, Susie, because there's a theme with all of you, which is that you're all into BDSM.
Yeah.
which it just happens when I gather a group together and I can't find like a non-kinky person.
Yeah, Dr. Sparkle Booth's over there.
So you're all into BDSM and you also do work in BDSM.
Yeah.
So what is that like for you? Because one could imagine that if you were a pro dom who had completely vanilla sex and never had SM in their real life, there would be an easy way to sort of compartmentalize there. Mm-hmm. But you're all kinky in real life and do kink for work.
Yes.
I'm scared of my family, but mostly I'm a graduate student who teaches undergrads. Mm-hmm. So that's actually scarier for me. Mm-hmm. So I have like a strong policy of 21 plus, because then I'm like kind of avoiding most of the newbie, like babies that are like I'm teaching. So navigating that, like I'll have a shift at the dungeon from like 11 to 5 and then I have a 6 p.m. class, or I have like the next day I have to go to like teach my section or whatever. I don't think I tried to have boundaries with my work in the sense of, like, I wouldn't be working on certain, like, workshops or agendas in on campus and vice versa, but that didn't really work out for me. Just, like, time-wise, I was like, there's really no moment that I'm not working for either job. Like, I have to be on emails regularly for my students or for my clients. So for me, it's always been about, like, okay, when I'm done for the day, I have to do some kind of ritual, some kind of, like, this, I'm done. Now I'm going into my, you know, my cuddles with my cat and my dog and my wife. Like, none of that is here. But I have very poor boundaries with it. It's like, they kind of just happen all the time, everywhere.
So I feel like in recent years, I've kind of slacked on my BDSM, like, in my personal life. I've been doing a lot more vanilla dating. fun stuff.
You don't see, but she's, like, winking at someone in the audience.
my non-kinky boy, but I'm bringing him over to the dark side. So I guess since I don't practice BDSM as much in my personal life, it makes it a little easier for me to incorporate it into my work. And that's kind of the angle I use whenever I am escorting and sugaring, is, like, I'm very open-minded. Like, is there that thing you've always wanted to try? Let me know. Like, I can help you with that. And that tends to, like, be a very good angle for me to use. You know, it's how I fisted my first asshole, and it was the best experience of my life.
Fisting's so much fun. It's my favorite pastime.
Yeah, sex work introduced me to fisting, too, and now it's a huge part of my personal life. Yeah,
if I totally could just be in somebody all day, I'd be so happy, like, puppeting someone around. Yeah. Like, talk for me, baby. I found what I wanted to say, but in that, like, yeah. I'm, like, I do practice, like, a lot of, like, kink in my personal life, and I don't know, because, like, they come from different places in my personal life than in my work. In my work, most of the BDSM that I do is, like, reparations play and role reversal race play. So white slavery, right? And using the white man for whatever I want. And so when I come home to, like, my partners, it's more about an even exchange of, like, what we both want, because none of my partners are white cis men. So it's more about loving on them and freeing them from, like, whatever they've been dealing with in their day. And, like, it's more about, it's not sensual domination at all, but it's sensual, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Because I'm a sadist. Like, that's, I am. But I think there's this sensual sadism that you can practice where it's, like, a cathartic healing sadism as opposed to I'm just hurting you and because you deserve to be hurt sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good place to stop for our first commercial break so everyone can sort of chew on all of that. When we come back, more with this incredible panel of sex workers. So stay with us.
Do you know what the month of May represents? Why, May is masturbation month. You knew that. We all know that self-care is sexy, and solo sex play is part of self-care. So join the Pleasure Chest as they dive deep into all things masturbation this month. They'll be going live on Instagram all month with free online classes centering self-care and self-pleasure to get you more in touch with yourself and all the benefits masturbation can bring. On May 10th, they'll be exploring femme dominance. May 17th, sex in your cycle. May 24th, expanding your orgasms through solo play. And May 31st, sex toys for the curious. All these live workshops will air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And during those live classes, there will be specials to take advantage of. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram to check out all information on these classes and more. And of course, go to pleasurechest.com to find out about in-store pleasure ed classes, their new products, and of course, their reliable, great customer service. Hey everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, live at the Pleasure Chest in West Hollywood. There's a really great group of people here. And you know where else there's a really great group of people? At the Swing Set Takes Desire. This is a commercial. The folks at Life on the Swing Set are hosting their 8th annual trip to the greatest place on earth, Desire Resort in Cancun, Mexico. It's a complete takeover of the resort, and they put on an inclusive, body positive, awesome event that brings together people from all walks of life. So whatever your thing is, nudism, polyamory, swinging, sex in public, BDSM, or maybe you're just curious about one or more of those things. The sexuality of the people there runs the gamut, and every year that I return, there are more bisexual men because I'm recruiting them. I'm coming back as a special guest this year, so I want to see you there. It's November 2nd to the 9th. Go to swingsetdesire.com to reserve your spot today. Today's show is about centering sex worker voices, and my guests are Susie Q, Avery St. Germain, the Goddess Corey, and Mistress Dylan Diosa. So, Goddess Corey, I think we should delve a little bit deeper into white slavery. Because it seems like we just sort of dropped that bomb and it was like, let's go to commercial. Because exactly. So I've had several people on my show to talk about race play and playing with race. But no one has spoken specifically about white slavery play or about reparations play. So I think now's the time.
Now's the time. Now's the time. Actually, when I started doming, because I didn't start in doming, I started with camming and fetish modeling when I was very first getting into the industry, and then I moved to porn, and then I've only been professionally doming for about 2 years. And so when I started, I was like, I feel like when you start in sex work, like you have to find your niche, your thing, your special, quote unquote specialty.
Your orientation.
Right, exactly. And so I was like, well, like, what do I like really enjoy like the most in this world? And that is like consistently been like making cis white men super uncomfortable and being really mean to them. And also like I'm a sadist and my like true sadism comes out with like cis white men. I love kicking them in the balls. I love hurting them like a lot. Because it's definitely coming from a place of like my own trauma. And it was a way for me to sort of, process like my own trauma in like my civilian life, in my childhood, in all these things in like a safe and consensual and paid way. Right. And sort of also like the product of it is that they walk away from the experiencing understanding better how to treat Black people out in the world.
I actually started with race play. Like, that was what got me into the kinky world, and rope. First time rope touched me, I was like, oh, I'm here, I'm dead. Yes. And for me, like, there's, like, that I do, like, colonial play. So I'm Native. So I do a lot of, like, first contact kind of, like, scene play. First contact doesn't mean as in, like, colonialism, right? First contact. And I do a lot of, like, my favorite is to have, like, white cis men, like, worship me. And it really came from, like, I wear a lot of feathers. Usually I'm not wearing any right now, but usually I'm covered in. I am wearing feathers. And for a really long time, I was being, I was trained, right, as a submissive, and then I became a dom. So during my trainings, there's always this feeling of, like, there was so much attention on being Native, and I really didn't like it. Like, I was like, I don't know. I don't think race play is my thing. And then when I became kind of switchy and doing more dom work, I was like, oh, no, it's totally my thing, just not when I'm, like, not be playing the role I want to be playing, right. You know, like... so yeah, having white men worship me and like lick my boots and serve as my chairs or tables is pretty empowering for me too. and I like putting them in torture ties. And seeing how long they can hold it for.
Yeah.
I like cattle prods.
Cattle prods, yeah.
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 There's a small segment of the audience right now looking you up on the internet. So I'm just going to say, like, keep going.
I'm like, right now, my position, I can't really do race play because most of my, so I've been doing, like, I guess you'd call it survival sex work for the past, like, two, three years. And most of my clientele I find within the strip club. And that's a risky choice to go up to strip club patrons and try that and, like, see who bites and who doesn't. You kind of have to.
I definitely think DOMs are in a very particular, like, particularly privileged situation in that, like, we can require that you worship us.
Yeah.
Where, like, if you're in a strip club and even if, like, you're making custom clips or if you're like, in the mainstream porn industry, you can't necessarily do that. That's not going to sell.
Well, I think that also was something that we were planning on talking about in this panel is Sesta Fosta. Like, that, you know, the way that you all have been able to do a niche, you know, in this and find the clientele that wants to connect with you is because we can access the internet. And that is increasingly under attack. And, you know, I think how those two experiences went up against each other, like, you know, what you can do when you're getting clients in the strip club, or sometimes I work poker parties, which is a similar situation. Like, nobody fucking cares that I'm Susie Q, an activist. Like, absolutely. It's been very difficult because I've, like, right off the bat sort of branded myself as this activist sex worker. And, you know, that's not... number, like, when people are looking for a discreet kinky experience, they're not like gonna choose the girl in red, white, and blue who's like, I'm in politics. Yep. Like, I have a large social media following. Like, it's just, you know, you really, but the luxury and the privilege of the internet has given people more options, has allowed sex workers to be more particular about the type of clients they take and the type of situations they're willing to be in with what type of people.
You're screening.
Yeah.
Which everything's getting increasingly harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so the screening process, what does it look like? I also imagine that, like, at different levels, there's more and more barriers, right? Like, if you're working at a commercial dungeon, there's a certain screening process versus when you're escorting versus when you're online and you do a clip show and then someone says, I want this in real life. How do you navigate all of that?
So precariously, and maybe talking about it is a federal offense now. So I don't know.
I'm like sort of like, I'm a bit sketched out by that question. Yeah.
I want to know why you're sketched a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that.
I'm sketched because are they going to take away the means that I have right now to screen?
Right. So if this gets us back to, like, Zesta Fosta stuff.
Right. If I expose the ways in which that I operate, mm-hmm. my operations.
And Sex Out Loud Radio could be held liable for facilitating human trafficking under Zesta Fosta if that information is recorded right now. Like, truly. That's okay. Where we're at, y'all.
So let's take another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to do some background on Zesta Fosta And then we're going to talk about how it impacts you on a daily basis in your lives. So stay with us.
Let's get real. Stress is a worldwide epidemic. We're working too much, we're doing too much, and we're inundated with the constant news cycle. And stress can affect every single part of your life. Believe me, I know. I started meditating about 8 years ago, and it changed my life for the better. That's why I'm partnering with Calm, the number one app to help you reduce your anxiety and stress and help you sleep better. If you head to calm.com/Tristan, you'll get 25% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes guided meditations on issues like anxiety, stress, and focus, including a brand new meditation every day. There are also sleep stories, which are designed to help you relax, and there's even soothing music. Right now, Sex Out Loud listeners get a 25% off Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's calm.com/Tristan. Get unlimited access to all of Calm's content today. Stop stressing and get calm. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, Level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud Live at the Pleasure Chest in West Hollywood. Hey, you might know me for creating various forms of media around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. But I am working on a project now that is something completely different. And I hope people who like my existing work might follow me on this trip. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I've created a Patreon, and I hope you will support my writing. Your support can make it possible for me to carve out time that's dedicated to write, pare down my travel schedule, which is also really great for my chronic pain condition, take writing classes, work with an editor, go to a writer's retreat. Plus, you get to interact with me in a more intimate place that is not social media. So I talk about stuff that I wouldn't talk about on social media. My Patreon is patreon.com/Tristan Taramino, and I hope you'll go check it out. Also, I know at least Susie Q has a Patreon. I think it's Patreon.
/whorecast.
It's patreon.com/whorecast. Does anyone else have a Patreon they want to plug since I'm talking Patreon?
I also have a premium Snapchat if you want the XXX stuff. Real Next Door or fancenter.com/therealwhorenextdoor.
Great. Okay, so we are back talking about centering sex worker voices. I want to talk about SESTA and FOSTA. We've talked about this on the show before, but I don't want to assume that everyone knows what it is, so I do want to give people some background. SESTA-FOSTA was signed into law April 11th, 2018. It purports to be a law that fights sex trafficking. And obviously, I'm just going to go without saying, we're all against sex trafficking, if you were fucking wondering that. But it's actually, the law is so badly written that it is a huge problem for anyone, not just doing sex work, but doing any kind of work or communication online that has to do with any of the sex industries. This is from the Free Speech Coalition website. Sesta Fosta will devastate protections for the sex worker community, do nothing to prevent trafficking, and make it harder for trafficking investigators. Sesta Fosta considers even consensual sex work to be sex trafficking. Any site used by sex workers will now be criminally liable for trafficking. Sites where sex workers advertise, warn each other about dangerous clients, discuss civil rights issues, or fight harassment and violence will be shut down. Because Sesta Fosta makes websites liable in this process of trafficking, the danger is obviously particularly acute for adult sites, but also sex education sites, social media sites. This is why we don't have Craigslist personals anymore. This is why there's no sex content on Tumblr. And this is why nothing that is even remotely sex-related can be advertised on Google, on Facebook, and other sites. So there's a chilling effect that's happened across the board with Sesta Fosta, and we think it's only going to get worse before it gets better. There are some amazing people fighting right now to strike down this law, but that fight is going to be long and slow and hard and expensive. I want to know, because you already brought this up, how has Sesta Fosta personally affected you?
Oh, man. I like lost it in April. I spent, you know, since 2000, I mean, I started doing advocacy in 2012. I started my podcast because of Prop 35 here in California, which essentially set that precedent for conflating consensual adult sex work with human trafficking. So if Tristan gives me a ride to work after the show, Tristan is now my trafficker. If I pay my mother's rent next month, she is now my trafficker because she's living off the avails of my prostitution, which is therefore sex trafficking in the eyes of the state of California. So that was happening in 2012, and I knew that was going to be real bad. So I knew I had to do something more than just vote. And so I started the podcast, and it tumbled into this advocacy career, right? I moved from San Francisco down to Los Angeles to fight Prop 60 and the Cal-OSHA regulations, but and we won that in 2016. We won. It was this huge victory. But we all know what also happened in 2016 in November. We had a huge shift in the administration. And it's important to understand that every Congress member, save for Ron Wyden in Oregon, and I think like Rand Paul, voted for Sesta Fosta. So we need to hold those people accountable. Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris was one of the prime sponsors. Elizabeth Warren is one of the prime sponsors of the banking bill that nearly decimated our ability to have banking accounts. So that tide is shifting because sex work decriminalization is the antidote to Sesta Fosta. And that is already underway from sea to shining sea, as I am very fond of saying. But literally from Hawaii to New Hampshire, Washington, D.C., there are trickles of the decriminalization movement. It's happening right here in California. We have SB 233. SB 233. Follow me on social media. There's already an app that allows you to like type in a couple things and fax something to your senator in your district that we need to target. That's going to, I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds around like what steps towards decriminalization are going to do and not do. But like what we're doing here in California is a tiny, tiny step forward, which is essentially giving amnesty to sex workers when reporting violent crime. So if I'm at work and I see some human trafficking or somebody getting raped or robbed, I can call the police, but not be arrested for sex work in that instance. It's not perfect. It's not a full solution, but it is a meaningful step forward in the process. And it's going to be those harm-reducing steps that get us towards decriminalization and get us out of the Sesta Fosta mess. So, I don't know. That's
For me personally, Sesta Fosta has made it a lot harder to find work online because now that websites are cracking down on adult content, that means that I'm like, what's the list? Okay, so my Tinder's been shut down about like 5 times. That's where I found most of my clientele. Once Tinder shut down, you know, I even went as far as to ask a friend for, you know, their info to make a fake number to make a Tinder. Still, my IP address is tracked. Like, I can't, you know, couldn't get on Tinder. Instagram gets shut down now. Instagram is probably the largest, like, free
site platform.
Yeah, free platform, free promotional platform where you can promote yourself. And, you know, Instagram is one of the strictest with shutting down sex worker accounts. And then, of course, it makes it harder to screen clients. So now when you want to, you know, check out the websites where people are posting about, you know, this man attacked me or this happened, those sites are getting shut down. So you can't get access to that. And so because of Sesta Fossa, that's where I started making more of my money and finding more clients within strip clubs. But recently, strip club laws changed too, which there's just an attack, a global attack on sex workers at every angle.
Well, I was in the Bay Area when I'm stripping when Redbook got canceled, like by the FBI, and it was really scary because also knowing that all of our information that had ever been uploaded had also been handed out essentially to police officers, right? So there was always this like really intense paranoia that I was being tracked in a particular way. And so I really wasn't online for a while, which means that you have to go back to the streets, you know, and to make that very clear, laws like Sesta and Fosta and a bunch of other ones we've already mentioned will only target, not will only, but makes it even more intense. And people of color who are already targeted are the ones that face the most of this violence, right? So it's like who is forced when Redbook got shut down? It's like who was forced back on the streets? It wasn't the people who could afford websites, right? It wasn't the people who had like nice pimps. Like, you know, it was the people who used Redbook as their only free advertising, their only like source of vetting, their only source of like making sure that their client wasn't an abusive dude, right?
One more thing about Sesta Fossa that I wanted to add that I feel like people don't realize is by having such extreme internet censorship, that just drives trafficking even more underground. It makes the problem 10 times worse. Now that pimps are out more, girls are more desperate, or, you know, it makes it 10 times worse.
I want to continue this discussion. We have to take another break. Let's do that. And when we come back, more on centering sex worker voices.
Do you know what the month of May represents? Why, May is Masturbation Month. You knew that. We all know that self-care is sexy, and solo sex play is part of self-care. So join the Pleasure Chest as they dive deep into all things masturbation this month. They'll be going live on Instagram all month with free online classes centering self-care and self-pleasure to get you more in touch with yourself and all the benefits masturbation can bring. On May 10th, they'll be exploring femdominance. May 17th, sex in your cycle. May 24th, expanding your orgasms through solo play. And May 31st, sex toys for the curious. All these live workshops will air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And during those live classes, there will be specials to take advantage of. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram to check out all information on these classes and more. And of course, go to pleasurechest.com to find out about in-store pleasure ed classes, their new products, and of course, their reliable, great customer service.
Tasty Hole. It's the world's first flavored butthole scrub to enhance the rimming experience. It gently exfoliates the external part of the anus and flavors it. Think glazed donut hole, peach ring, hot vanilla latte, and cherry gobbler. When I first heard about this product, it did seem like a novelty, but I think it's the perfect gateway for beginning rimmers. It encourages you to dive in and eat some ass. And anything that does that is awesome in my book. Find it at tastyholescrub.com. Use code Tristan for $10 off your order. That's tastyholescrub.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We are live in front of an amazing studio audience at the Pleasure Chest in West Hollywood. Today we've got a panel of brains and beauty talking about sex work. Avery St. Germain, the goddess Corey, Mistress Dylan Diosa, and Susie Q. Before the break, you all talked about who are the most at risk. Who are the people doing the most precarious sex work? The majority of people on this panel are women of color, and I'm hoping that you'll speak to being a woman of color in the sex industry.
Yeah. I was like, I want to clarify, not at risk. We are targeted.
Right.
Intentionally. Society has been structurally and systematically and institutionally created to target Black bodies and Native bodies and to sort of put everyone else in between there and figure out hierarchies, right? So we are vulnerable, not because our fault, but because people choose to make us vulnerable.
This is the goddess Corey. I just want to make a clarification. I'm not a woman. I'm non-binary. I just present femme. And so, like, being... I'm just going to speak to, like, being femme presenting, like, in my work. Or being... being a femme of color in, like, my work. Because it's so, like, paramount to, like, what kind of work that I do. And actually, like, to go back a little bit, like, when I started in porn, I was, like, or, like, yeah, when I started porn, like, I was definitely, like, this fetish creature, right? Because when you're Black and you're in porn, it doesn't matter, like, what else you are, like, what you want to do, like, you're a Black porn star or Black porn performer over everything else. So it doesn't really matter, like what kind of thing you want to do in the industry.
Okay, so online, it's very, I've come to terms with it. I've accepted it. It's fine. I've gotten used to the discrimination I face online, you know, with, let's say, sugar dating. When you're on the sugar dating site and at least like 8 out of 10 profiles you come across will specify no Black girls. No African Americans. Only interested in Caucasian, Latina, Arabic, every single ethnicity. Everything else. You know, that huge list. So from there, I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever. Like, I can deal. Then you get to in-person work for me, which is mostly the strip club, where it's so in your face because lots of... I mean, I feel like we're bringing a change to it now, but in a lot of sex work industries, racism is the norm and it's accepted and nobody challenges it because these aren't PC spaces and, you know, that's how the status quo is and we don't change that. So, you know, it's the way it works is so systematic too. Like, it's insidious. You know, like, I'll have shifts at the club where if I'm the only Black female there, all of the men will stare at me like I am the most disgusting thing they've ever seen. And then they will go to the back room where someone who is not Black is asleep with a giant hoodie on, covering her entire face and body asleep. And they'll wake her up and be like, you're tired. Here's $1,000 to buy your night so you can sleep it off.
Also, like, similar thing happens in, like, dungeons is, like, there might be one Black dom on the roster. Might.
Maybe.
How many Black submissives they have? Very few, but exponentially more than they will have Black doms or Black switches. Yeah, which is why, like, I never joined a dungeon and why I'm freelance is because they don't want me. And it's also, like, I tried auditioning at, like, a couple clubs and actually auditioned at a club that Avery works at. And no, time wasting. Like, I sat there and I think we have to, like, in any industry, Black folks have to work 100 times harder to get 100 times less than our counterparts. And so that just maintains itself and is worse, again, like Avery said, because, like racism is acceptable.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be there.
We just don't talk about it. Like, you know, anytime I vocalize, like, oh, like, I just had a really racist encounter with that customer or something. people look at me like, what? Like, no, like, that's not it. Like,
oh, but we love Scott. He's right. Great.
Yeah.
He's Scott great. He's such a great. Oh my God, he's a regular.
He's a regular. All the time. He's fine. He spends so much money here. He never does that to me. He gets dances with every girl.
No.
Yep. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think I work at a dungeon. I used to be a stripper for a really long time, too. And just the level of entitlement to my body before we've even started the engagement, you know, like, was very clear to me and evident that, like, I was not taken as seriously, even though there's been this exchange where you're clearly contracting me for this thing. Like, this is a financial exchange. Even then, it, like, how we get to that place, I feel disrespected, you know, like, at our at the dungeon, there's, like, a little area where you talk to folks, and I always just pay attention to how the men will interact with the doms and the submissives, and the amount of times I get grabbed immediately as I walk in versus everybody else, all the other white doms, I actually still haven't seen a white dom get grabbed by one of the clients. And these are people who are regulars, you know? Yeah, and so, and also just, like, I have to be, like, state my boundaries very clear, which then makes me already aggressive, right? Where I have to say, like, excuse me, can't touch me, you know? Like, and I have to, like, give them a cute little face and pretend that I'm fine. Yep. Because if I don't do that, then I'm aggressive and I'm not probably going to get that session.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then there goes my money, you know? Yep. Yeah.
The idea that men enter a space where they want to be submissive, where they're looking for a dominant, and then, it's not that I know the answer to that. Like, I know that, like, these men who want to submit are also, like, pushy and needy and annoying. But, like, the idea that there's this hierarchy where they will treat white doms in a particular way that they will not treat you, even in a space where the roles are so clearly defined, fetishized, wanted.
Yeah.
So. I've had to adjust to how I play with people, because if I'm too sensual, they take it as an okay to touch me.
To top you.
And like, to be like kind of switchy with me. And I'm like, I'm not a fucking switch. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a reason why I wear all black and my name only says dominatrix on it. Domina. Like, get it straight. You know, like, there are plenty of other people back there who are switches. So I have to definitely adjust how I play and there are just certain scenes that I will not do with people. Like, if they're way too sensual, I'm like, no, I'm not even going to play those boundaries with you, because I already know that I'm going to lose, that those boundaries are going to be overstepped, and that you think that it's okay just because you tip me $20. If you tip me, which is the best part, where it's like, I don't get tipped. All the white doms get tipped. I'm just saying, fabulous. So
you can clap. I want to reiterate all the ways that you can find them. Avery St. Germain is Avery St. Babe, spell out the word saint, on Instagram, and Avery St. Germain, STGERMAINE, on Twitter. The Goddess Corey is The Goddess Corey on Instagram. Mistress Dylan Diosa is Mistress Dylan Diosa, DILANDIOSA on Instagram. Suzy Q is Suzy Q Media, SIOUXSIEQ Media on Instagram and Twitter. And Real Whore on Snapchat. I'm Tristan Taramino on Instagram and Twitter. The show is Sex Out Loud Radio on Twitter. Pleasure Chest is Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram and Pleasure Chest LA on Twitter and PleasureChest.com. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, who's my normal guy, but Steve... That made it sound like you weren't normal, Steve. Sorry. Steve is on the board today doing all the sound stuff. And everyone at Voice America, tune in next week, Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, for another edition of the show. Until then, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show.
go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.